Hello and welcome to the Reverend Hunter Podcast. This is Tony Jones. I'm the Reverend Hunter, joined as always by the lamb to my lion, Brandon.
Hey, Tony. How you doing? I like that one. I'm cool.
Well, Brandon, here's the deal. This week, I am flying to Los Angeles to go on this big mommy podcast. It's called the Ellen Fisher Podcast.
Okay.
To debate a Christian vegan.
What? Really?
Okay, uh-huh. Yeah, man. There's a people can look it up. This guy made a movie called Christspiracy. And in it, he argues that for 2,000 years, the church has covered up the fact that Jesus was a vegan because the church is, you know, in bed with big meat and industrialized farming. And I guess has been since the first century.
Yeah.
So they covered up this secret truth that Jesus was a vegan. And so I know, dude. And I am prepping to debate this guy for like 3 hours. I think the debate's going to go 2.5 to 3 hours. And they're filming it. You know, this is like a, this woman has 750,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think this thing will get a lot of play. So I'm doing a lot of prep for it. And of course, they're going to be like, well, in Isaiah, it says the lion lies down with the lamb, you know, and so that's the kind of ideal future is that there's no more predators and prey and we just eat vegetables and this kind of thing. So This is why today, Brandon, I'm the lion and you are my sidekick, the lamb.
That is wonderful. That is, I will tune into this podcast. That should be interesting. Wow.
I know. I don't know when it'll release. Sometime this spring, of course, I'll link to it and announce it here on the pod and stuff. But now, yeah, that's...
I just have to ask one clarification. So are they saying Jesus, or is he saying Jesus is a vegan or vegetarian? Is it, I'm confused by that little specification.
Well, that's a good point. They're very cagey in the movie and they're like, hey guys, we're just asking questions. we're just saying, isn't this interesting? And that should really make you think. Like they cover their bad biblical interpretation by just, hey, we're just here to, like, I don't know, point some things out. Isn't that curious that this is this and this is that, you know?
Sure.
So they don't actually ever land the plane. I think that's part of their thing. And they keep saying, like, at the end, they're like, hey, we're just here to start a conversation. You know, they're not biblical scholars, the two guys who made the film. They're filmmakers. One of them's a lifelong Christian. The other's a Buddhist. So, that's a great question. They don't really say specifically. They kind of go back and forth. I guess they would probably say a vegetarian.
Sure.
Because they say, they admit that, like, John the Baptist ate wild honey. But then, the question is, well, what about he ate locusts and wild honey? That's what the Bible says, right? And they're like, oh, no, the locusts, that was a type of bread called locust bread. That's what it's really referring to. I'm like, oh.
That's a new one.
So, biblical scholars for 2,000 years have misinterpreted that word that means locust, and they should have interpreted it as locust bread.
Right. It's like, it's just like that fish bread they mentioned in the Bible too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I could go on and on. Yeah. I've been really deep in I've been like refreshing my seminary Greek and like I'm preparing. So,
well, hey, that's kind of awesome. Kick your brain into gear in another way. That's fun.
Yeah. Oh, it's been super fun doing this research. I mean, it's been a long time since I've done research like this. And these are, you know, I'm hoping that opportunities like this kind of pop up to let people know my book exists, which, speaking of which, you know, it came out a week ago. And
congratulations.
Thanks. And I just, a huge, huge round of thanks and applause to everybody who showed up. There were like probably 200 people came to the book release party, including the godfather of the Talk North Net. Well, I guess the godfather would be Jim Suhan.
Yeah.
What would Scott be? The the big boss man. He was there. Scott's been such a great supporter of mine. I'm just so grateful. He donated stuff from the Flush and from Minnesota Bound. And I'll tell you one cute story is that there were just a few little kids there, and my two nieces were there, and Scott donated a little raven, like stuffed animal, you know, Raven, the black lab, Ron's old black lab, with, you know, it's got the little like red bandana Flush, and it's the icon of Ron Scher Productions, right? It's like the logo is Raven, you know, and Raven's very famous in Minnesota. For people who aren't from Minnesota who are listening, Raven's this famous black lab who is Ron's sidekick on this show for like 20 years on Minnesota Bound. So there was this little plush little doll thing, and my niece, when it was time, we were doing this drawing, and my nieces came up and they were standing right in front. They're like, "Oh, we want to win this little dog so much, so much." And I drew a number, a ticket, and it was a guy, an older guy, and he came up. I gave him the Raven stuffed animal, and he just spun around and handed it right to my nieces.
Oh, that's so nice.
Oh my gosh, it was so cute. I sent Scott a picture, and then I gave that guy I'm like, well, you get a Flush hat instead, since you gave away the stuffed
animal. That's really cool. That's nice.
Yeah, little things like that. Yeah. It was great. It was great. And the audio we're going to play today for the podcast is audio you're going to... Brandon, you're going to have to work a little magic on, but I recorded on like a little shotgun mic setup my book reading at the, so this is a shorter episode today, folks, but I wanted, for those of you who weren't able to be there, I wanted you to have just a little sense of what that night was like, audiological goodness in your earbuds of, you'll hear me reading and you'll hear some crowd noise and maybe a little laughter and some applause, but just to give you a sense of the energy, I read a passage from a chapter called Risk, and it's the very opening of that chapter about a trip I took my kids on when they were young on Gunflint Lake, and we got caught in a storm. And I read it because I've been told by multiple people, I don't know if they say that's their favorite passage of the book, but it's like, it's a very memorable passage, I guess, because of the way I wrote it and because of the image of these three little kids in this fishing boat when we get caught in this like massive gale.
It's a great chapter.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Yeah. You've listened to me.
Yes, I have. It's a great, it is really is a good chapter.
And speaking of that, Brandon, I've been listening to the audiobook a little bit because, of course, it's been a long time since we did it back in December. It sounds so great, man.
Oh, thank you.
You did such a good job. I mean, holy smokes.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. It was fun to do.
I'm so happy. If you're an audio person out there listening, it is on Spotify. It's for, if you're a Spotify premium member like I am, it's free. I mean, it's just included in Spotify premium. But you can also get it on Audible. It's on like the Google Play Store. It's on the Apple, whatever. I don't know what the Apple Books or whatever that is. It's on all the places now. And as you listen to it, if you think, wow, this sounds really clean, you got the Brandon Morton to thank for that. So kudos, man.
Well, I got to be honest. It was my pleasure doing it. I learned so much while doing that book and editing it. I actually apply a lot of those techniques now to my editing for podcasts. So,
oh, no kidding.
Yeah, yeah. I learned a lot. It was good for me. It was kind of like what you were saying earlier. I was revamping an old education, something I'd learned in the past. So it was nice. Mm,
that's great. Well, I've already given your contact info to at least one author who wrote me and said, oh my gosh, who did your audiobook? I need to do my audiobook. So
all right.
Who knows? You might have a little more side hustle work.
I would be all for that.
Yeah. So, well, thanks, Brandon, as always. And thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you enjoy this little snippet of the book release party that took place on April 2nd at Wooden Hill Brewing Company. Shout out to all the sponsor organizations who donated gear. Shout out to Wooden Hill Brewery. They were fantastic. And of course, to all my beloved friends and family who showed up to celebrate that night. If you're interested in the book, just go to godofwildplaces.com and you can find it on all the different formats, print, audio, etc. And thanks for your support. Thanks for listening. And here's me reading from my book on April 2nd. This book took a long time. I first wrote my literary agent. I don't even have that literary agent anymore. I have a different literary agent. I wrote my last literary agent about this idea in 2012. As some of you know, I've written books in a week before. I'm not proud of it, but I've done it. And this book took that long. It had to seep. A lot of people had to read it and give me feedback. Some of the feedback was a little rough, but it's exactly what I needed to hear. It became a better book as it got shorter and shorter, and I cut out stuff that didn't need to be in it. And I got a new literary agent, and he challenged me, because I was struggling with how to, I'd written a lot, but I was struggling with how to frame it. Like, what was my voice? Because it was so different than all my previous books, which had all been about how you should pray, how you should think about Jesus, how you should understand the crucifixion, how you should be a pastor, and things like this. And he said, I want you to reread some books by Barbara Brown Taylor, and that I want you to shape your book like that. Now, some of you have never heard of her before, but she's a great author, New York Times bestselling author. She happens to be a friend of mine, and so I was rereading one of her books, and I texted her and asked if I could call. And she said, yeah, of course. So I called her and I said, I'm rereading your book, Learning to Walk in the Dark. And I'm trying to use it to help me find my voice for this book and reshape this book. And I said, I notice you never say should. That's not how you write. But I think these are books about how people should live their lives, but you never say should. She said to me, should, yeah. That's how guys talk. Women don't really use should. She said, just tell stories and trust your reader to figure it out. So that's what I ended up doing. That's why the book's a lot shorter, and it's why I reluctantly wrote a chapter at the end about God, which my editor made me write. And I already had a friend text me this week and say, you didn't really want to write that last chapter, because I didn't want to have to say anything normative about God. So that's not what I'm going to read. You can skip the last chapter if you want. I'm going to read from chapter 7. Divorced, broke, and foreclosed upon, I tried to make memories with the kids every Tuesday and every other weekend and alternating holidays, which included Memorial Day weekend 2012. I bought a coupon for half off a camper cabin at the end of the Gunflint Trail in Wayne, northern Minnesota. No running water, no sheets on the bed, no toilet. It's all I could afford. But the deal included a half-day rental of a fishing boat with an outboard motor, which I hoped would be the highlight of the trip. We drove 6 hours north in the rain, fell asleep to the sound of rain on the cabin roof, and woke to more rain. Mounds of dirt around the newly constructed cabins had metamorphosed to rivers of mud, which we forded to the communal bathroom. The kids were 12, 10, and 7. We spent most of the first day reading books confined to the tiny cabin by a chill drizzle. We ate cold cereal for breakfast and soggy sandwiches for lunch, and I attempted in vain to light charcoal on the cabin's grill for dinner. Instead, we drove to Trail Center Lodge for burgers and milkshakes. The next day, the weather broke, so we grabbed our fishing gear, hiked down the hill to the docks, and claimed our boat. The lodge is at the west end of Gunflint Lake, along a sweep of water that runs east-west. After getting some advice from other anglers who were pushing off, we puttered east, trolling for fish of any kind. I sat in the stern, a hand on the tiller, while the kids hung lines over the gunwales. At some point, Aiden hooked into a big one, and I awkwardly reached to help him net the fish, while also trying to keep the boat pointed into the wind, which was picking up. Cheers of elation erupted when we got the fish into the boat, a 3.5-pound lake trout, a beast.
Who wants to go to Canada, I asked, pointing north across the Narrows. It's right over there. More cheers. I turned the boat north and throttled up the motor. On the far shore of Gunflint Lake, the kids climbed out onto a rock. I snapped a photo and congratulated them on being international travelers. As the kids got back into the boat, I noticed the clouds overhead, low enough to touch, it seemed, and racing across the sky. Unusually, they moved from east to west, giving the waves a 7-mile runway down the lake to pick up steam. Then the rain started. Horizontal, huge drops pelting us like miniature water balloons exploding on our faces. The storm was upon us before I knew what was happening. I tried pointing the boat south, but the first wave that hit the port side almost capsized us. I wrestled with the tiller, turning us east into the Whitecaps. I shouted over the wind and rain for the kids to sit 3 abreast on the middle bench and hang on to one another. The dead trout sloshed around the deck in the expanding pool of water. When the bow crested a swell, the wind batted the boat sideways, and breakers again threatened to surmount the port side. I shouted at Tanner to move forward. We need weight in the bow. He looked back at me with distress etched on his face. On all fours, he crawled to the front bench, scrambled upon it, and braced himself by grabbing the bow with both hands. Aiden and Willie bounced on the middle bench with each wave, laughing, blissfully unaware of the severity of our predicament. I couldn't see more than 20 feet in front of us. I steered the boat straight into the wind. I hoped we were going east-southeast, but I had no way of knowing, since I could see no landmarks and had no compass, and we were 30 miles from a cell phone tower. We mounted each wave and violently slapped down on the other side. Mid-wave, the outboard motor's prop came out of the water and cavitated, suffocating on air. If the motor died, we'd be in real trouble. I rotated the tiller handle counterclockwise, throttling down. If I spun it too far, I'd kill the engine. I found a rhythm, throttling up when we climbed a wave, throttling down when we descended the other side. Seeing a generous trough between waves, I pulled the tiller hard to port, swinging the boat around. Now we were going with the wind, the gale astern. Good news, we made better progress, and the pitching was less violent. Bad news, the occasional rogue wave came over the transom. The water in the boat was ankle deep. Lightning flashed, followed too closely by teeth-rattling thunder. I zigged and zagged our way across the lake, into the wind, then with the wind. I figured that we'd eventually reach the south shore, where I'd beach the boat and find shelter. But then, after I don't know how long, Tanner shouted that he saw something. The end of a dock came into view. Then we saw our boat's siblings rocking in their slips. Somehow, we'd emerged from the squall at the exact right spot. I clumsily docked the boat, and we scrambled out bedraggled and soaked. My body shuddered with cold and with the terror that only really hit me when we were safely on shore. But the kids were gleeful. For them, it had been an adventure to rival any amusement park ride. Aiden giddily held up his trout and asked if we could cook it for dinner. We did. And we agreed it was the best fish we'd ever eaten. That night, as I lay awake, images of an upturned boat and 3 children gasping for air tormented me, along with the voices in my head telling me what a terrible father I am. Well, I go on to write about risk and danger in that chapter, and you can read it for yourself, but I want to give you a little sense, if you haven't read it yet, of what... There's a lot of room in this space. I'd love to see all of you. After a little, are we getting ready to draw some tickies?
Yeah, Yep. So if you don't have a ticket, a raffle ticket, if you would raise your hand, so
just
I
just give me the roll.
You can open your phone.
Yes.
Thank you. And Tom and I, you can talk around. But look, we're gonna just—we got a lot of gear to give away, thanks to my wonderful friends at all these organizations. We're gonna pull tickets. If you don't come up within 30 seconds, we're pulling another ticket. That's fine. And if you win the like the best, really, really expensive. Best money, best, and you don't want it.
We'll take it.
We'll take it. Same with the cigar. No. If you don't want it, you can just grab a hat and we'll give it to somebody else. So we'll get the last ticket to that one. It's a great time to get the beer, but if you don't get the beer, get your ticket to somebody else and not miss any of the raffles. But we're going to get the raffles done kind of quickly.
Yep. Yeah. Hey, well, let's give Tony a call.